a little bit of country corn music. That's what that sounds like. Todd Zwillick and Noel King filling in for John Hockenberry this week. Do you ever watch the Sunday political talk shows with all of the commercials about big money and big influence? Of course you do. Listen to this.
If you drive a flex fuel vehicle, E85 ethanol is now available throughout the Northwest. E85 is a cleaner, smarter fuel choice produced right here in Oregon. Made by converting corn, grass, and crop waste into fuel that helps drive our economy and protect our environment.
Now, a commercial like that isn't really aimed at consumers because it's either in your gas or it isn't. No, no, no. That's aimed at lawmakers, influence makers, corporate buyers, and shareholders. Now, the U.S. economy is the world's number one producer of food and the world's largest producer of corn by far. Now, that corn feeds people, it feeds livestock, but it also feeds cars in the form of the ethanol that you just heard about from ethanol producers. The federal government now requires that a certain amount of ethanol be produced from corn each year in this country. It was just over 13 billion gallons in 2012, and that's meant to decrease our reliance on foreign oil. But as the country faces the worst drought in more than 50 years, can we afford to turn perfectly good food into fuel? Professor Yanir Baryam is president of the New England Complex Systems Institute in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and joins us now. Professor, hello.
Hi, Todd.
Thanks for joining us. 13 billion gallons of ethanol. How much corn are we talking about here? Is there a way to put that in the context of boxes of cornflakes or popcorn or something I can put my finger on or put in my mouth?
Well, I mean, the main thing is that it's 40% of the U.S. corn crop. And that's 16% of the global corn, and it's about 4% of all grains produced in the world. So it's a very large amount of the world food supply.
And there are increasing calls from your institute, the New England Complex Systems Institute, also from a top UN food official, Jose Garciano, also from Purdue University, saying that getting rid of these corn ethanol requirements that I described could actually make food a lot cheaper at a time when commodities are really expensive. Is that true? How would that work?
Yes. In fact, the ethanol wasn't a significant fraction of the U.S. corn even 7-8 years ago. And prices of corn, and actually prices of food, have gone up by about a factor of 2 because of the use of corn for ethanol. So what we have is a situation that particularly poor people around the world that are dependent upon grain basically directly as their food supply have been impacted directly by this corn to ethanol conversion in a very dramatic way over the last, again, not very many years, just 6-7 years.
Now, is that because of the price pressure of ethanol strictly, or is there evidence that converting 40% of our corn to ethanol is actually causing a physical shortage of people not having enough to eat despite the price?
The answer is a little bit more subtle. Remember, it's a supply and demand system at its core, and what you're doing is you're diverting a major part of the supply into fuel. So that's going to drive prices up, and it's going to push, you know, the people who cannot afford the food into hunger, right? And so there's 1 billion people in the world right now that are in chronic hunger, and that's become quite a bit worse because of the conversion of corn to ethanol starting about 7-8 years ago.
That's Professor Yanir Baryam. He's president of the New England Complex Systems Institute in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Professor, I said in the intro that converting ethanol into fuel is supposed to relax our dependence on foreign oil. That's a true statement, but that's not just what it does. We have a complex system of subsidies and mandates for ethanol that actually satisfies a lot of important political interests in this country. They can't be discounted.
Well, the political issues are fairly transparent, as you mentioned. It is worth noting, however, that the amount of energy that the corn provides for us is only about 1% of the U.S. energy consumption. You know, it's 6% of gasoline by energy, It's not a very large proportion of our energy needs. It is a much larger proportion of the global food supply. And that's an important distinction that is not being considered in the context of this regulation.
Okay, so relatively small impact on energy in exchange for a large impact on food prices is what you're advocating. How much of a reduction in ethanol requirements in this country would be required for a result that you would consider worth it? How much of the corn incentive do we have to get rid of, even if temporarily, to help solve the problem right now?
Well, there are of course two levels of the discussion. One is the fact that there is a drought this year, and in the context of the drought, it's adding on top of this background price increase. The factor of two that I mentioned in prices of food was even before the drought happened. With the drought, prices are shooting higher. Just in the last few weeks, corn has gone up by 60%, wheat has gone up by 40% because the grain prices are linked. That's going to have a very big impact in the short term. What we had, of course, we didn't talk about is that in 2007 and 8, there was a very big food price peak that coincided with lots of food riots around the world. And in 2010 and 11, there was a second food price peak that coincided with the Arab Spring. So food not only drives people into hunger, it also creates desperation that causes severe social unrest and revolutions. And right now we're facing the possibility, in fact, the likelihood of a third price peak that's going to be worse than the other two. So we're facing an immediate and urgent problem. And to address that, the ethanol mandate should be reduced for this year. How much it needs to be reduced eventually depends upon the specifics of the crops, but surely having it or even eliminating it for a year would make sense at this point in time. Long term, there's a need for really more careful assessment of the benefits and the costs of taking food and converting it into fuel. But that's something that can be done after the crisis situation is addressed.
This crisis is, of course, happening during a drought, as you mentioned, Yanir Bar-Yam, but also during an election. And I know you're already thinking this. I wouldn't want to be Mitt Romney or Paul Ryan or Barack Obama or Joe Biden and travel to Iowa and agree with you.
I think that people who are observers of the situation on the political side would agree with you that in an election year, actions that are taken are very unlikely. Because of that reason, the president last week said that they were going to buy meat in order to satisfy the meat producers that are unhappy with the high price of feed. But that obviously is not addressing the problems of people in the third world. In general, there is a common theme throughout this these issues where people are watching their own interests. But globally today, if we are concerned only about our own interests, we will suffer the consequences because our world is a connected world and we are all involved in the same system.
One of the questions seems to be here in this election year and beyond is whether people will be able to frame this ethanol issue in terms of national security and the unrest that high food prices cause overseas in places like the Arab world, Yanir Bar-Yam, or whether it will just simply be a domestic issue of prices, subsidies, and mandates here at home. And that's going to be an interesting part of this. Yanir Bar-Yam is president of the New England Complex Systems Institute in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Professor, thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd.